From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Rafael, California.
I'm from San Jose.
Hayward, California.
Nopa.
Coming up, we look at how social media is helping people find their stolen stuff.
And I start emailing people and just saying, like, hey, I found my bike. It's in Portland. If anybody knows anybody in Portland, like, let's spread the word and let's try to get it back. And at that point, like, it just spread like wildfire.
Then we'll meet two women who made music out of friendship.
Just by being her best friend, I get exposed to this, like, crazy psychedelic world.
And this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound will introduce us to some new characters.
Occasionally, if they're really disturbed, you'll hear a big,
What is that? Find out today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Picture this. You spend your morning riding your bike around town, enjoying the breeze on your face, the wheels on the pavement, and your feet pumping the pedals. After a quick trip into a store, you come back outside to find your lock cut and your bike gone. San Francisco police are trying a new approach to bring stolen bikes back to their owners, and it's all happening on Twitter. Police officers are using the social media site to post pictures of stolen bikes and suspects. But they're also using what they call bait bikes, bikes that are high in monetary value and equipped with a GPS tracker. These bait bikes are meant to be stolen, and when they are, officers can trace the bike's whereabouts in real time and even tweet about it before they catch up to the thief. Before San Francisco police rolled out their bait bikes, victims of bike theft were already using Twitter to get their rides back. In this story from our archives, KALW's Isabel Angel found out how social media is turning ordinary citizens into ace bike detectives.
Jenny O'Hatfield is what you would call an avid cyclist. She's into mountain biking, indoor cycling, and road racing. She also happens to know a lot about social media from her work as an interactive producer at KQED. So when someone stole her brand new mountain bike from her Oakland home last summer, first she got upset. Then she sprang into action.
So I just kind of put together a description with a photo and disseminated it far and wide on the web. I emailed cycling groups. I posted it on Facebook, Google+, Twitter, Flickr, you name it. It's just blanketed the web and informed as many people as I could.
A week later, Jillian Betterly, who didn't know Hatfield but had seen her posts, recognized the bike at Oakland's Laney Flea Market. She went up to the guy selling it, showed him Hatfield's post on her phone,
and she just took it back. So I really lucked out in getting the bike back within a week.
Hatfield's stolen bike was found in a flea market. This is pretty common. Flea markets are a fairly unregulated and anonymous place to sell.
Is this bike for sale?
Yeah.
How much?
June Takeda goes to flea markets most weekends, including this one across from Laney College in Oakland. He looks for lots of things, old cameras, vintage audio equipment, and he's gotten especially good at spotting bikes.
If I know it's like a super rare bike or like a nice frame, and it's at a flea market, I mean, it's obviously stolen.
Takeda works in the cycling industry and owns 8 bikes. When he sees a bike he knows has been stolen, he'll buy it, take it home, and go online to try to get it back to its owner. Last year, he found a Davis Finney model Cerrada at the Ashby Flea Market in Berkeley. It's a really rare bike that isn't made anymore.
Just walking through the flea market, and I saw it out of the corner of my eye. I knew exactly what it was when I saw it.
Dealers I called say that bike could be worth several thousand dollars. Takeda got it for $120. When he got home, he searched for a post about the bike on Craigslist and immediately found it. 2 hours later, owner and bike were reunited. The guy told Takeda it had been gone for about 6 months. Over the past year, Takeda's found and returned 3 bikes. He doesn't ask to be reimbursed, though sometimes grateful owners happily do so. Takeda figures it's good karma. Speaking of which, as we walk around, Takeda asks me if I've ever heard the story of Justin LeBeau.
So, I guess, did you talk to about the DeRosa frame? Or it's such a ridiculous story, especially since, like, everything on that bike is so rare.
I hadn't talked to Justin yet, but I had heard of his story from Jennio Hatfield.
He had had a DeRosa track bike, a very rare vintage, beautiful Italian track bike stolen 6 years ago. And he never lost hope that he would find it. He was always scanning, you know, cycling forums, Craigslist, eBay. And one day he got a lead that it had been surfaced up in Portland.
So at that point, I'm pretty confident, 100% confident that it's my bike, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, Justin LeBeau.
So I go crazy on Twitter and every cycling forum that I am a member of, just saying like, hey, I found my bike. It's in Portland. If anybody knows anybody in Portland, like, let's spread the word and let's try to get it back.
This is when Hatfield gets involved. After she got her bike back, she kept using social media to help other people find theirs. She's also friends with LeBeau. So when she heard his story, she put the word out on Twitter.
Anyone in Portland want to help me recover a potentially stolen bike that's been missing for years?
She tweets at a Portland news anchor who's also a cyclist.
Have any contacts in Portland who could help recover a friend's stolen bike? He's 99% sure it's his.
Who loops in Portland's mayor, Sam Adams.
I don't, but I bet Joel does. Or we could always appeal to Mayor Sam Adams about the bike thief.
By now, the bike has a huge Twitter following.
I hope your DeRosa will find her way home to you.
Portland, help. This story needs a happy ending.
They used to hang horse thieves, you know.
At one point, someone messages Hatfield directly with a lead.
FYI, one of my teammates spotted the bike in North Portland. Went to get a lock to keep it there, but it was gone.
They missed the bike that time, but more and more people are retweeting the news. A Portland police officer takes on the case, and that's when the original seller finally emails back Justin LeBeau with bad news.
He sold it to a guy, you know, this guy is, you know, just like some kind of vague description, like totally useless. But he did give me an email address.
LeBeau sends that email address, along with the original seller's email, to the Portland cop, who's able to put some pressure on them. The seller emails LeBeau, saying he'll give the bike back as long as the cops don't show up. So one of Jennio Hatfield's friends in Portland offers to go pick it up.
So Saturday morning, 9 a.m., he goes over there, rings the doorbell, no answer. And of course, like, we're all on the other end of this, like, on email and Twitter, like, did he get the bike? No, like, he won't answer the door.
Across the country, thousands of people wait. And an hour later, the door opens.
DeRosa found!
So many times, yeah, it was done. Like, the ad was down. It's done. We're never going to get it back. Or, you know, he's not going to respond to the email. You know, we should just give up. Yeah, I guess we got really lucky.
He was lucky. While there are other success stories, many more bikes are stolen than are ever returned to their owners.
You can see right there, January, I think I got, I don't know, that's 15 to 20 bikes right there.
In a warehouse near Jack London Square, Oakland police officer Dan Dowd is showing me where the police keep the bikes they do find. There are about 50 of them, all recovered in the last 3 months.
Yeah, you know, we've had people that come by and they just take a look at the bikes. You know, we have an open door here from on Thursdays from 10 to noon, and people just kind of come over here and, you know, I got my bike stolen. I just let them look through the bikes and see. But again, very rarely do we. I don't think I've ever had one person in the approximately 10 years I've been doing this say, oh, that is my bike. You know, so we have, like I said, recovered a couple, but they were by serial number.
That's key, by serial number. Officer Dowd says there's no way for police to return a stolen bike without a serial number and the police report.
You should also take lots of photographs of your bicycle.
Again, Jennio Hatfield.
A lot of times when people email me on the Google groups, they don't have a picture, they don't have any sort of, you know, great description, and they're like, well, it's a red road bike and it had a basket on it.
Justin LeBeau has this to add.
The things that seem to have the best success are, you know, Craigslist, eBay, cycling forums, and, you know, I think social media as well. If you can find the right channels to broadcast the message, then I think people will pay attention.
And June Takeda has some pretty basic advice.
Best thing to do is just to not get it stolen in the first place.
Right. But if it is stolen, all the bike hunters say keep looking. You might be surprised at what turns up. In Oakland, I'm Isabel Angel for Cross Currents.
If you've been a victim of bike theft, did you ever get it back? How? Tell us about it. Use our social media. We tweet at KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. A good network of friends can be key to solving a theft and to starting a band. Musicians Emily Ritz and Casey Johansing were best friends and performing in separate bands when they got an idea. They were on tour, and while on a stop in Norway, they decided to form a duo. But it wasn't until they got back from their trip that they came up with their band name.
We were watching videos our trip in Norway and said no way, and then said yes way, and then we were like yes way, yes, that's way. that's our band name, yeah. We've done it. So yes, that is where yes way came from.
That was 3 years ago. Now yes way is coming out with their first full-length album. Ritz and Johansing tell us more about their musical friendship in this edition of Bay Area Beats.
Hi, this is Emily Ritz.
And this is Casey Johansing.
And we're Yes Way.
Usually, one of us, while working on music together, will bring a song to the other person.
Home, sweet home.
And then just sort of start playing it and then let the other person start playing along. It's just kind of like, okay, let's just focus on this part and let's just play this part for an hour or whatever and see where your voice starts to intertwine, whether your voice be your actual voice or your guitar or the bass or whatever. Sometimes that happens totally organically, just us sitting together and one of us will start playing a chord. And then within a period of time sitting together, we'll write a song completely from the ground up together.
Our song Carried Away started as us just kind of jamming, you could say, on this harmonic guitar line that I started messing around with out of boredom during a recording session. And it ended up, what we were doing together sounded kind of cool, and we were like, well, let's go with this.
And in the arrangement of Carried Away, lyrically and musically, it's cool because Emily and I are sort of having this conversation where you know, like one personality is more like earthbound and then the other personality is kind of more whimsical or
wanderlust,
yeah. And they're kind of having at it with one another a little bit. So that was a really cool song to write together.
Yeah, and it does go on a journey. The whole middle section of the song is a musical journey through the universe and back.
I would have never made this kind of music, I don't believe, if I hadn't met Emily and been exposed to her, like, wild, beautiful world of creativity.
I feel the same way in that getting to know Casey as musically as well as my close friend. She inspired me and influenced me to bring more beauty, I think, into my songwriting and into my voice. And that really influenced me. I wasn't always interested in creating beautiful music.
I
song Motion started kind of as a little accident, right? Because we were just goofing around at your house a long time ago, before Yes We Even existed, and sort of I did a little like ooh, and you did a little bop doop and whatever, and then it somehow got looped into this like 7 second long loop, and it was just so cool. We're like, whoa, what do we do? And then I, 6 months later, wrote this guitar part that could be combined with that little accidental vocal loop we made, and then it ended up being the first song we ever wrote together. And Woshin was just sort of, we weren't stoned, but or, I don't know, but it felt like a stony, just like looking out at the ocean when we were in Hawaii once, going like, Woshin. That's it.
Yeah, and I feel like that word really represents Yes Way. Yeah. Probably more than any other word.
Motion is sort of like our anthem too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here we are, and this is what we like to do, or this is what we can do.
Emily Ritz and Casey Johansing are the musical duo Yes Way. That segment was produced by KALW's Martina Castro. Yes Way's first full-length album will be released June 3rd. You can catch their next performance on June 25th at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco. All the details are at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. On Tuesday, we aired a story about programming boot camps, and we asked if you would sign up for one. Here's what some of you said.
Yeah, hi. This is Brian Davis. I am a pharmacist, and I would consider it if there was a way to bring in my scientific background and pharmaceutical background and add to that the ability to program and to help automate some of our systems, I would certainly do it.
Next message.
Hello, my name is Robert Weber. I'm a 52-year-old mentally gifted man who has not worked in 12 years and would love the opportunity, if I could find the financing to do it, to get a career going that could actually help catch me up to living in the real world and be financially sustainable.
End of messages.
Those were listeners Brian Davis and Robert Weber responding to a story we aired on Tuesday about programming boot camps. We love to hear your comments on any of our stories, so call us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. That's also the number you can call to guess our audiograph mystery sound of the week. And it's about that time. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
One Ian has in the scope is up in the tree. There it goes. Okay, here it is. So look with your eyes. Here it comes. You can see it just fine. There you go. So keep watching. It's probably going to go right back on its nest.
We asked you what that was and where we recorded it. To bring us the answer, KALW's Melanie Young met up with a retired lawyer and labor rights activist who's become obsessed with some of Golden Gate Park's biggest residents.
Okay. In Golden Gate Park, from morning till dark, I'll watch over my blue herons. A squawk and a squeak.
My name is Nancy DeStefanis. I'm the executive director of San Francisco Nature Education, and we're at Stowe Lake.
Can I see now? Would you like to come see?
I started this program 12 years ago called Heron Watch. And what we do is we set up telescopes, spotting scopes, and we lead tours of the wild birds, including the great blue herons that nest here.
It's kind of looking straight at us now.
I can see it.
With the binoculars? Oh, good. Is that beautiful? Did you see the bright yellow on the bill?
I call myself a community naturalist. because I'm good at getting people out here to see these wonderful birds. To me, I want the underserved children of our city to experience the wonders of walking around for 2 hours with binoculars on dirt and seeing these wonderful birds. So it's still about social justice for me. It's just at a different spot where I'm going into classrooms with my volunteers and then taking them out here with all my naturalists.
So we saw the heron picture of the big fish in his or her mouth. What else do you think the heron might eat? Mice? That's a good one. What else?
Now, the heron is really a charismatic bird. It's got a magnificent 6-foot wingspan. It's got a gold beak, and he's 4 feet tall. I mean, it's hard to miss these birds, and yet people would walk around the lake and have no idea that these birds were right opposite them on this little island.
Okay, here it is. So look with your eyes. Here it comes. You can see it just fine. There you go. So keep watching. It's probably going to go right back on its nest.
Beautiful.
And there it goes. Oh. Just as planned.
We saw a flying heron.
Do herons make a sound? Like today, I didn't hear the herons making. Do herons make a sound?
Herons, great blue herons, make an incredible sound. It's guttural. So if a heron, another heron, tries to fly into their nest, they will squawk like crazy at that bird. Very, very squawky and very loud. When the chicks are about to be fed, we hear them making little squawking sounds all over the lake. You can hear them up in the nest.
Because now you know where he is.
It's not a baby.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
would you like to see again? Because now it's moving a lot.
So I love what I'm doing, and I'll be doing it for the rest of my life. Just birdies and me. Come on, everybody. High up in a tree, you'll soon be a great blue heron. That's Aaron. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. My favorite song.
Well, we got some good guesses on this one, but nobody got it quite right. Don't worry, you'll have another chance to win a KALW t-shirt next week. Want a sneak peek? Here it is.
We just released 100,000, or transferred 100,000, and we're going to take these out to the Golden Gate and release them.
So, do you know what that was and where we recorded it? Give us a call if you do, 415-264-7106. And if you're correct, you might just win a KALW t-shirt. We'll reveal the answer on next Thursday's Cross Currents. And that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Maya DePaula Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Sandia Dirks, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Christina Loring, Julia Scott, Stephen Short, Charlotte Silver, Eric Wayne, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. And before we leave, we'd like to congratulate all the graduating seniors of the class of 2014 here at Philip and Sala Burton High School, where our studios are located. Four of those students were Cross Currents interns last summer: Christian Rose, Marco Choi, Megan Quintana, and Ben Vu, who was class valedictorian. Congratulations from all of us here at KALW. This is the ensemble Mic Naouj, which blends Western European classical music with rock, pop, and hip-hop. The East Bay Express calls their sound the future of hip-hop. The ensemble Mic Naouj has a free show on Saturday afternoon at Yerba Buena Gardens in San Francisco. Music starts at 1 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
power over instruments. You'll discover if you blubber more insulin. I won't be hesitant to take one of these cellos and bust it over your head, man. You won't be mellow. Under the slave masters, classic go from Sebastopol. It's a NAFTA flow to get the cash and go. International. I'm still popping my collar because I'm from the...